Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Ana Mateo and Jonathan Evans. Later, Armin Kasabian answers a question from an English learner in this week's Ask a Teacher. We close the show with an American story. This week, it is $1,000 by O. Henry. But first,
when day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade?
On Wednesday, poet Amanda Gorman read her poem, The Hill We Climb, at the swearing-in ceremony of President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. By Thursday, the 22-year-old was a superstar. Gorman is the youngest poet in U.S. history to mark the change of presidential power. Past inaugural poets include famous writers like Robert Frost and Maya Angelou. Gorman is a native of Los Angeles, California, and in 2017 was named the country's first youth poet laureate. She recently completed her studies at Harvard University. On Wednesday, Gorman offered a hopeful future for a deeply divided country.
We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised, but whole, benevolent, but bold, fierce, and free.
Her reading, and the ceremony as a whole, took place exactly 2 weeks after a violent mob of supporters of then-President Donald Trump attacked and occupied the U.S. Capitol building. Gorman says she had completed a little more than half of The Hill We Climb before the January 6th attack at the Capitol. That day gave me a second wave of energy to finish the poem, Gorman told the Associated Press. She chose not to make direct note of the attack, but her references to the event were clear.
We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it, would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated.
Hours after the inauguration, her two books, which are to be released later this year, became number 1 and 2 on Amazon.com's sales list. Gorman's poetry collection, The Hill We Climb, and her children's book, Change Sings, are set to be published in September.
Among all the young sumo wrestlers in the circle, 10-year-old Kyuta Kumogai stands out. He weighs 85 kilograms. That means he is 2 times the size of the other children his age. His big size makes him very good at his sport. When he wrestles boys 5 or 6 years older, he wins. He is so good that last year, Kyuta was named the under-10 world champion. He defeated competitors from as far away as Britain and Ukraine. Kyuta is a shy boy of few words. When reporters for the Associated Press asked him why he likes to wrestle, His answer was simple. It is fun to beat people older than me. His father, Taisuke, created his son's training routine. And the training is not easy. The 10-year-old boy trains 6 days each week and does many different exercises. He lifts weights, moves huge tires, swims, and runs. The goal is to build up flexibility and quickness, two things needed for sumo wrestling. Kyuta has been on this routine since about age 6. That is when his father first entered him in a sumo competition. "I didn't teach him anything," Taisuke said, adding that his son could wrestle naturally. Taisuke himself used to be a sumo wrestler. "There is a talent for sumo," he said, "and he has that talent." After winning that first competition, Taisuke thought his son may have a special talent for sumo. The training costs a lot of money and requires sacrifices from the entire family, including his mother, Makiko. His father says he does not gamble. Instead, he is betting everything on his son. When it became clear the boy had talent, Taisuke moved the family to the Fukugawa area of Tokyo. This area is famous for sumo wrestlers. It has many sumo clubs. It also has the Nami no Sukuna Shrine. This is where the god of sumo is said to live. So there is a lot of local support for sumo culture. Father and son use a local temple for intense one-on-one training. The training usually ends with the two wrestling up and down the carpet in front of the main temple. Taisuke pushes Kyuta so hard that the child is often left breathless and crying. But the father believes it is the only way to get the best out of his son. "I think he is managing to make time for himself, and I think he has time to play with his friends," explained Taisuke, adding, "I don't think it is too much pressure." Besides training, another important part of sumo success is food. On an average day, Kyuta will eat up to 4,000 calories. This includes over a liter of milk and a lot of protein. Steak is his favorite. While Kyuta ate a large meal, his father told reporters that his son needs to put on another 20 kilograms by the time he enters middle school in 2 years. If he does that, the hope is he will be taken in by a famous sumo coaching team. Taisuke said there has already been interest. Kyuta himself said he wants to reach the level of Yokozuna. That is the highest ranking in the sport. But he admits the workout routine and lifestyle can be extreme and hard. Sumo training is something you don't describe with words like enjoy, Kyuta said. "When it became tough, I have thought about quitting sometimes. For now, the struggle toward the top continues for both father and son." I'm Ana Mateo.
Giggling bread and joyfully dancing salad are not the usual meals served in Thailand. But one eatery is hoping its foods made with parts of the cannabis plant can interest foreign visitors. The restaurant at a hospital in Prachinburi province started serving the meals this month. Thailand recently took cannabis off its list of narcotic drugs. The government then permitted some businesses to grow the plant. Pakakrang Kwankau is the project leader at the hospital. She told the Reuters news service, cannabis leaves, when put in the food or even a small amount, it will help the patient to recover faster. She added, the cannabis leaf can improve appetite and make people sleep well and also be in a good mood. The hospital is known as being the first in Thailand to study marijuana and its ability to ease pain and extreme tiredness. Thailand became the first Southeast Asian country to legalize cannabis for medical use in 2017. Since then, many medical marijuana centers have opened across the country. The restaurant's offerings include a happy pork soup and deep-fried bread topped with pork and a marijuana leaf. Another is a mix of crispy cannabis leaves served with pork and vegetables. I've never taken cannabis before. It feels weird, but it's delicious, said Ketsarin Bunsari, one person who ate at the restaurant. Another, Nathano Naranan, said the taste of the cannabis leaves was similar to some other vegetables. But she said the after effects of eating cannabis were very different. Thai Deputy Education Minister Kanakwan Wilawan said the next step was to offer new versions of famous Thai dishes to appeal to people across the world. We plan to add more cannabis to Thai dishes that are already well known, such as green curry soup, to boost the popularity of these dishes even more, Kanakwan said.
This week, we answer a question from Kaya from China. Could you tell me the differences between technology and technique? And how do we use them in our daily life? Thank you. Dear Kaya, thank you for your question. The words technology and technique are different, but they both come from a Greek word meaning the study of an art or craft. Words starting with tech and techno describe a skill, art, or way of doing things. Technique is a way of doing a specific activity. For example, if you study the guitar, you can learn techniques for playing different kinds of music. If you like cooking, you can learn techniques for making foods from around the world. Here is an example.
The soccer players train every day to improve their technique.
Technology is the use of scientific knowledge and methods. Technology makes jobs easier by improving machines and tools. For example,
a camera is now easier to use because of digital technology.
You can use numerous techniques to use the same technology. Here are two examples.
My technique for taking better pictures is to take more pictures of friends for fun. Nabila knows how to use camera technology to take better pictures of her friends.
A telephone is a kind of technology that has changed over time. Techniques for using telephones have also changed.
Over 140 years ago, the phone was a new technology for people to communicate. Now people use new techniques like texting and messaging to communicate over the phone.
And that is Ask a Teacher. I'm Armin Kasabian.
$1,000, said the lawyer Tolman in a severe and serious voice, and here is the money. Young Gillian touched the thin package of $50 bills and laughed. It's such an unusual amount, he explained kindly to the lawyer. If it had been $10,000, a man might celebrate with a lot of fireworks. Even $50 would have been less trouble.
You heard the reading of your uncle's will after he died, continued the lawyer Tolman. I do not know if you paid much attention to its details. I must remind you of one. You are required to provide us with a report of how you use this $1,000 as soon as you have spent it. I trust that you will obey the wishes of your late uncle. You may depend on it, said the young man respectfully. Gillian went to his club. He searched for a man he called Old Bryson. Old Bryson was a calm, antisocial man, about 40 years old. He was in a corner reading a book. When he saw Gillian coming near, he took a noisy, deep breath, laid down his book, and took off his glasses. I have a funny story to tell you, said Gillian.
I wish you would tell it to someone in the billiard room, said Old Bryson. You know how I hate your stories.
This is a better one than usual, said Gillian, rolling a cigarette, and I'm glad to tell it to you. It's too sad and funny to go with the rattling of billiard balls. I've just come from a meeting with my late uncle's lawyers. He leaves me an even $1,000. Now, what can a man possibly do with $1,000? Old Bryson showed very little interest.
I thought the late Septimus Gillian was worth something like $500,000.
He was, agreed Gillian happily, and that's where the joke comes in. He has left a lot of his money to an organism. That is, part of it goes to the man who invents a new bacillus, and the rest to establish a hospital for doing away with it again. There are one or two small, unimportant gifts on the side. The butler and the housekeeper get a seal ring and $10 each. His nephew gets $1,000.
Were there any others mentioned in your uncle's will? Asked Old Bryson.
None, said Gillian. Well, there is a Miss Hayden. My uncle was responsible for her. She lived in his house. She's a quiet thing, musical, the daughter of somebody who was unlucky enough to be his friend. I forgot to say that she was in on the ring and $10 joke, too. I wish I had been. Then I could have had two bottles of wine, given the ring to the waiter, and had the whole business off my hands. Now tell me what a man can do with $1,000. Old Bryson rubbed his glasses and smiled. And when Old Bryson smiled, Gillian knew that he intended to be more offensive than ever.
There are many good things a man could do with $1,000, said Bryson. You,
he said with a gentle laugh.
Why, Bobby Gilliam, there's only one reasonable thing you could do. You can go and buy Miss Lotta Laurier a diamond necklace with the money, and then take yourself off to Idaho and inflict your presence upon a ranch. I advise a sheep ranch, as I have a particular dislike for sheep.
Thanks, said Gillian, as he rose from his chair. I knew I could depend on you, old Bryson. You've hit on the very idea. I wanted to spend the money on one thing, because I have to turn in a report for it, and I hate itemizing. Gillian phoned for a cab and said to the driver, "The stage entrance of the Columbine Theater." The theater was crowded. Miss Lotta Laurier was preparing for her performance when her assistant spoke the name of Mr. Gillian. "Let it in," said Miss Laurier. "Now, what is it, Bobby? I'm going on stage in 2 minutes." "It won't take 2 minutes for me. What do you say to a little thing in the jewelry line? I can spend $1,000. "Say, Bobby," said Miss Laurier, "did you see that necklace Della Stacy had on the other night? It cost $2,200 at Tiffany's." Miss Laurier was called to the stage for her performance. Gillian slowly walked out to where his cab was waiting. "What would you do with $1,000 if you had it?" he asked the driver.
"Open a drinking place," said the driver quickly. "I know a place I could take money in with both hands. I've got it worked out, if you were thinking of putting up the money."
"Oh, no," said Gillian. "I was just wondering." 8 blocks down Broadway, Gillian got out of the cab. A blind man sat on the sidewalk selling pencils. Gillian went out and stood in front of him. "Excuse me, but would you mind telling me what you would do if you had $1,000? Asked Gillian. The blind man took a small book from his coat pocket and held it out. Gillian opened it and saw that it was a bank deposit book. It showed that the blind man had a balance of $1,785 in his bank account. Gillian returned the bank book and got back into the cab. "I forgot something," he said. "You may drive to the law offices of Tolman and Sharp." Lawyer Tolman looked at Gillian in a hostile and questioning way. "I beg your pardon," said Gillian cheerfully, "but was Miss Hayden left anything by my uncle's will in addition to the ring and the $10?
"Nothing," said Mr. Tolman.
"I thank you very much, sir," said Gillian, and went to his cab. He gave the driver the address of his late uncle's home. Miss Hayden was writing letters in the library. The small, thin woman wore black clothes, but you would have noticed her eyes. Gillian entered the room as if the world were unimportant. "I have just come from old Tolman's," he explained. "They have been going over the papers down there. They found a..." Gillian searched his memory for a legal term. "They found an amendment or a postscript or something to the will. It seemed that my uncle had second thoughts and willed you $1,000. Tolman asked me to bring you the money. Here it is." Gillian laid the money beside her hand on the desk. Miss Hayden turned white. "Oh," she said, and again, Oh. Gillian half turned and looked out the window. In a low voice, he said, I suppose, of course, that you know I love you. I am sorry, said Miss Hayden, as she picked up her money. There is no use? Asked Gillian, almost lightheartedly. I am sorry, she said again. May I write a note? Asked Gillian with a smile. Miss Hayden supplied him with paper and pen, and then went back to her writing table. Gillian wrote a report of how he spent the $1,000. Paid by Robert Gillian, $1,000 on account of the eternal happiness owed by heaven to the best and dearest woman on earth. Gillian put the note into an envelope. He bowed to Miss Hayden and left. His cab stopped again at the offices of Tolman and Sharp. I have spent the $1,000, he said cheerfully to Tolman, and I have come to present a report of it as I agreed. He threw a white envelope on the lawyer's table. Without touching the envelope, Mr. Tolman went to a door and called his partner, Sharp. Together, they searched for something in a large safe. They brought out a big envelope sealed with wax. As they opened the envelope, they shook their heads together over its contents. Then Tolman became the spokesman.
Mr. Gillian, he said, there was an addition to your uncle's will. It was given to us privately, with instructions that it not be opened until you had provided us with a full report of your handling of the $1,000 received in the will. As you have satisfied the conditions, my partner and I have read the addition. I will explain to you the spirit of its contents. In the event that your use of the $1,000 shows that you possess any of the qualifications that deserve reward, you stand to gain much more. If your disposal of the money in question has been sensible, wise, or unselfish, it is in our power to give you bonds to the value of $50,000. But if you have used this money in a wasteful, foolish way, as you have in the past, the $50,000 is to be paid to Miriam Hayden, ward of the late Mr. Gillian, without delay. Now, Mr. Gillian, Mr. Sharp and I will examine your report of the $1,000. Mr. Tolman reached for the envelope. Gillian was a little quicker in taking it up. He calmly tore the report and its cover into pieces and dropped them into his pocket. It's all right, he said smilingly. There isn't a bit of need to bother you with this. I don't suppose you would understand these itemized bets anyway. I lost the $1,000 on the races. Good day to you, gentlemen. Tolman and Sharp shook their heads mournfully at each other when Gillian left. They heard him whistling happily in the hallway as he waited for the elevator.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.